Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to my show. I'm your host, Diana Bellaros, award-winning and best-selling author of Fahrenheit, The Journey of Transformation, The White Within. And I'm working on my brand new book, which is titled Dare to Tell the Truth. And I'm hoping to be out to the end of the year. So welcome to my show. And my website is dianabellaros.com. You can download my podcast there on iTunes, on Google Play, everywhere. So let me know what kind of a topic you would like me to cover, and I'll be more than happy to do that. And I hope everybody is safe and everybody is doing their best to stay healthy. And today I have a very, very powerful woman, very strong woman who does amazing things about the victims of domestic violence, as well as being the voice of the unlawfully convicted victims. And she's with us today, and I hope this show is going to help you somehow, and it's going to make you get involved also against injustice, against people who haven't done anything wrong and just they don't know how to defend themselves. And her name is Emmy Bellon. She's a successful real estate and marketing professional. She's a passionate advocate for wrongfully accused victims of criminal justice system, as well as women's empowerment. Her initiative, Rising Awareness for the Innocent, which brings awareness to those unable to find their voices, to share their truths in innocence, now has over 90,000 followers. She is recipient of the 2018 People of Distinction Humanitarian Award by Our Call from CBS Radio and the Melbourne Woman Award. She's been nominated for the Department of Justice Victim Advocate Award. In addition, she's one of the and has raised funds to the Innocent Project of Florida. And she's with us today. Please welcome Emmy Bellon. Hi, Emmy Bellon. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you? Trying to quarantine very safely.
Yeah, me too. I do the same thing. I do the same thing like most people do. So, but we're going to get out of this situation and we are going to be fine. That's what I think. So anyway, tell us, how did you start it, all of this? What made you start doing that? It's really difficult work, I'm sure, but it's amazing work at the same time.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I hope everybody is doing well and safely, making sure that they're healthy and social distancing. So I want to say that. And thank you for having me on your show. My incident, my situation that led me to where I ended up, actually started in 2014. I was getting divorced and I was attacked by my former husband, who is a former law officer. And that was the only time he ever attacked me. And when he attacked me, I went downstairs to call the police. And what I didn't know in the state of Florida is that if you call the police, somebody's going to get arrested in domestic violence. And it's so important if you're a victim of domestic violence to know that, because unless you know it, you are going to be sadly mistaken if you have a manipulative, conniving former husband or husband. So when I went downstairs and called the police, I was on the phone with 911, and he came down with a stab wound and told the concierge to call the ambulance that I'd stabbed him, which I clearly hadn't done. But nonetheless, he went outside and met the officers and the officers and told them he was an ex-cop. And, you know, he was 6 feet. I'm 5'4". He was 225. I was 125. It was just, it was ridiculous. I ended up being wrongly arrested that night. He did not get arrested despite the fact I had bruises all over me. And even on my 911 call, I'm yelling, take the fingerprints. My prints aren't on the knife. And when I finally got the report, there was only one fingerprint. So it was just a crazy situation. But when I got out of jail, I was charged with a second-degree felony, assault with a deadly weapon, facing 15 years in prison mandatorily if convicted. And it was only one under manslaughter. So I hired a lawyer, and I told my lawyer, don't offer me a plea. I'll go to jail. I didn't do this. And in the early days, I just knew I had to prove my truth. And I voluntarily took a polygraph, which my lawyer was kind of shocked. But I thought, you know, before he testifies and gives a deposition, I need my truth. That's all I had was my truth. And, you know, they always say that these polygraphs don't do anything. In my case, what it came down to 16 months later was the state of Florida actually asked for a copy of the polygraph I had taken where I exceeded the threshold of honesty because everything, you know, in the story didn't add up. So when the state polygraphist reviewed it, they concurred with my polygrapher that I indeed did not stab my husband. Shocking. And the case was dismissed. But you know, it didn't take away the fact that, you know, it's bad enough to be a victim of domestic violence, but to be re-victimized the same time you're calling for help by the people in place to help is just got involved with the Innocence Project, because that represents people who are wrongfully convicted, meaning they're wrongfully arrested, wrongfully charged, and then they get convicted, and they can spend, some of them spend 35 years in prison, and they're innocent. So I got very passionate about that because I knew that I could afford my truth, but lots of people can't. So that's how I got involved with that. You want me to jump to the next story?
What happened to you? Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So next story. So now that I have my expunged record, I've successfully overcome the first issue, the first situation I had. I took a job in Sarasota for a big company. I live in Fort Lauderdale. I wanted to prove I could do what I do in my truth with the new story. And so I was taking a job in Sarasota, and the week before I was moving, my ex-husband got served with civil papers because I was not going to let him get away with what he did. I was like, no, you're going to pay for this. So I'm not going away. So
good for you.
He's I dropped it though, because when you're not crazy, you don't know how crazy thinks, and that's really a true statement. You know, you forget, and I'm a pretty, you know, I stand up for myself as much as I can, but you can't stand up against crazy. So he got served, and he got served in his office, and I knew that was going to be horrible for him because he's a sociopath and a psychopath, and he's got a huge ego. And the mugshots I spent dollars to push down on the internet, which unfortunately it's a World Wide Web, they're never going to go away, started coming back up. And that I ended up getting the job actually rescinded by the owners. And they said it wasn't the mugshots, but I knew it was mugshots. You know, unfortunately, a mugshot tells a story, and it's not always the truth. So through a friend, I was introduced to a cyber-stalking expert who works in the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And we were the largest coalition in the United States, the most powerful coalition, with about $60 million in funding. And untouchable. By statute, this coalition was actually the only in the country coalition that received monies without any competitive people. So it was, they had a monopoly. Jeb Bush put them into statute, and basically the same person ran it for 20 some years before she stopped. So I was introduced to somebody that was a cyber stalking expert to help me get my mugshot down. And he came to my home to look at my computers because I said I was concerned I had spyware. By the way, my ex-husband had spyware on my computers. So he ended up taking advantage of me in my most vulnerable state, and it was awful. And, you know, I ended up finding out some things about him, like he lied to me about certain things, and when I found out 6 months later, I wasn't going to say a word about anything, but because he knew he was caught lying to me, he started going into my phone and into my computer and changing text messages and changing emails. And and trying to cover up his behavior because he knew he should never have done anything, and he was trying to cover it up, kind of like my ex-husband taking a knife and stabbing himself. Same exact situation. And I was just like, there's no way that somebody's going to do this to me. And if you've ever been cyber-stalked, it's very, very, very horrific and scary, and it's intrusive. There's so many words I can't even articulate how bad it was. And I hired a lawyer. The lawyer, I was able to prove that he cyber-stalked me. I was hell-bent on proving this because it's a crazy thing. You know, you hear about things in movies, cyber-stalking, and, you know, unless it happens to you, it's like, it's unbelievable. Literally, it's unbelievable. So the lawyer sent a letter. This is the beginning of 2018, sent a letter about what happened to me, and the coalition immediately went into his computer where they discovered naked pictures of women in his computer and emails of sexual nature. And this is a man working with domestic violence victims for the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence, former officer, and he was a cyber-stalking expert. So the coalition did the right thing. They actually terminated him immediately. So I knew that I did the right thing by sending the email or saying I want to do a lawsuit. So we sent a letter. We didn't actually go to a lawsuit. So I thought, you know, they're a coalition. They obviously know something happened. I'm going to wait to see what they say, what they do. I'm a victim. Well, when the coalition didn't do anything for 4 months, nothing, other than firing him. So obviously there was something wrong. They validated that just by firing him. I was like, you know what? The fact that I'm a victim and they haven't reached out, I found disgusting. And I hired lawyers. And I said, you know what? I want to file a lawsuit. So we did. And the response we got from the coalition was they victim blame me. And that just got my, you know, got, I guess, a fire under my ass, so to speak. And when that happened, through a friend, I ended up getting an article in Medium magazine, and it was about what happened to me. And a month later, when I still hadn't heard anything, I took that article to the Miami Herald through a friend. And the Miami Herald was interested, and they said, we're going to run a story. And I interviewed with the journalist, and right before the story came out, my lawyers called and said they want to go to mediation. So I said, pull my story out. And they said, well, we might be able to pull your story out, but we're still going to run a story because now we found out they have been paying their president almost $800,000 a year. And this is a nonprofit organization. So the story ran about the exorbitant salary of the CEO of the Florida Coalition. And that story prompted what has just happened to the coalition over the past 6 months. They've been taken out of statute. They found out that there's been their $7.5 million was taken in paid time off by the president, former president Tiffany Carr. The top level executives were also getting paid time off, and it's been all over the news in Florida. But it's one of the biggest stories because it actually took them completely out of statute. And the end result was I went and testified twice to the House of Representatives up in Tallahassee about what happened to me. And we were able to provide the Chief Inspector General, the governor, and also the Attorney General. I'm sorry, the not the Attorney General. Yeah, the Attorney General. All the information of what happened to me, how I was cyber-stalked. And we found out that the man that cyber-abused me was actually a former officer who actually preyed on young girls in a high school. And a letter was sent to the police department he went to go work for, and nobody did anything. And as far as I know, nobody ever investigated who those women were in that computer. So fast forward, current day, the coalition by the state of Florida has got a lawsuit against it. By the Attorney General, the federal government's getting involved, and the Department of Child and Family Services has placed a lawsuit against this organization. They are now currently being disassembled, if you will, taken completely out. I think they'll be dissolved in the next couple of weeks. They went into receivership, all the top-level executives. Many of them were forced to resign. And now we have somebody who's going to take over the 42 domestic violence centers. So it all kind of happened very quickly. And I'm laughing just because it happened literally as we were going into the coronavirus. The attorney general came forward and said, you know, we're going to sue the Florida Coalition Against Domestic Violence for taking taxpaying dollars from victims.
Yeah.
You know, but the real tragedy, though, I will say, you know, the most riveting testimony I heard was a domestic violence. They kept asking the CFO and the COO how many victims would have been helped with the $7 million that was stolen. And,
yeah.
You know, they were involved in this, so they couldn't answer. They, you know, they were guilty, too. I mean, one had 600 hours of paid time off, days. We're talking days, not hours. 600 days of paid time off. And, you know, they couldn't answer the question when the board asked them all these questions, the legislature. And a woman testified the day they went into receivership before they went in front of the judge and filed a lawsuit against them. One of the executive directors from Tallahassee said that with $6 million, they could have helped 18,000 domestic violence victims.
Absolutely.
With this money that this woman bought houses with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the story, the big story in the Reader's Digest version.
Good for you. Very good for you. You know, it's absolute tragedy, you know, to do something like this when you're doing, you know, charitable work. And when it comes to domestic violence, which is a lot right now, I can see a lot of people even talking about it, especially now during the pandemic. And I don't know if you know, here in Los Angeles, where I live, Ariana donated $6 million. And even the mayor, our mayor, Garcetti, talks about it, that they have a shelter for women for domestic violence. They have safe place, you know, everything is safe and they don't have to worry about anything, because I don't have to tell you how dangerous it is once you leave the home. You need to be very careful. Yep. Most of the women got killed. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
74%. Even, I think 74 people get killed when they leave their spouses. I think it's only 24% survive. And those numbers are just absolutely staggering and
yeah.
sickening all at once. But you make a good point with the pandemic. It's so, you know, even in Florida now, we obviously have shelters still open and places available for domestic violence victims to go. While, you know, many are stuck and feeling stuck, I think it's important that I don't know who's listening, but if you are a victim of domestic violence right now, it's so important to reach out if you can to these different organizations. The sad part is, though, I will say about the coalition is, you know, when my story started to unfold, I started receiving emails from not only other women who had gone to coalitions and not received the help they needed, or been turned away from domestic violence centers, or worked for domestic violence centers and tried to report some of the things that they were witnessing working inside the coalitions. And the fundamental problem here is there's no oversight of any of these organizations. And they're supposed to be the National Network to End Domestic Violence is supposed to oversee all these coalitions throughout the entire country. And that's not what's happening. And so I think you're going to see a movement now with this coalition being taken out of statute and everybody telling me you're not going to make a difference. You're not going to make a difference. Well, it takes one person to stand up and say it's not okay. This is not okay.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I just got lucky that there was another story that was bigger than my story, because my story didn't come out until recently.
Wow. So somebody did the same thing, stealing money it's absolute tragedy. You know, it's so sad to see, because this is a huge problem. And we have been dragging it for years and years, and people don't understand that this is a criminal act. You know, you cannot kill somebody and get away with it. And men these days, especially narcissists. They're very manipulative and they know their way out. And I'm sorry what happened to you, you know. And I know very well how very well manipulated they are, because it comes with the sickness they're having. It's really difficult.
Yeah. It is. And that's a pandemic right now going on too with domestic violence, is that unfortunately, you know, when the Violence Against Women Act was enacted after 1994, it mandated that somebody gets arrested in domestic violence. The problem with that is that because police see so much domestic violence, they're a little desensitized sometimes, or they don't have the right training. I don't know what the case is, but you know, what we've seen is a 30 to 40% increase of women being arrested in domestic violence incidents. However, the conviction rate is still 90% men. And I'm not saying men aren't victims. They are too. So I'm not excluding that. But as a woman, I can only talk to what I, you know, really took a lot of time to study. And that's the travesty, is that you've got women who have children that now their children are taken away from them because they've been arrested and kicked out of the house, and now there's a restraining order against the wife because the police believe the man who might have been the perpetrator. And it's just horrible. And what's worse about that, though, is even with my case, when my case was over, I took a polygraph, and then the state asked for it, and they concurred I told the truth. Well, when I went to the state attorney and said, here's your evidence, you need to go, let's go back to the night I called for help, you need to go arrest my ex-husband, but not only just for beating me up, but now he also lied and perjured and all these things that are felonies. And the state attorney said to me, well, those are very difficult to prove. And I said, well, listen, your state concurred that I told the truth, I didn't stab my husband. I said, what do you mean those are tough, it's tough to prove, there's only two of us there. And both the state and my defense attorney said I didn't do it through my polygraph, and they refused to reopen my case and they refused to reopen my case. They refused to do anything. They sent me back to my criminal lawyer, funny enough, and when I went, couldn't understand why the state attorney was saying, well, you need to go talk to your lawyer. I walk in his office, and he looks up at me and says, okay, what did you do? And I said, well, I went to the state attorney. I want them to go after my husband, my ex-husband. And he said, Amy, I don't know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I said, because when I hired you, I told you, one, I won't take a plea. And number two, when does he get arrested for what he did to me? And I meant it. And he said, and these were the words that hit home, and this is how scary our government is. He said, Amy, you do know that I'm on the board to reelect the state attorney, don't you? That was my moment where I said that was a little bit of a threat. And with a wrongful arrest of a woman who's got no history of anything, whose life you've just turned upside down because you could, and you don't want to fix it because that would admit doing something wrong, which would be the right thing to do. It wouldn't look good for a state attorney that's trying to get reelected. So they refused to reopen my case, which is why I wrote my book, Fabulous to Frame. I said,
Absolutely.
I was like,
why women are less than men? Why, if you defend a woman, this should be something good, this should be something amazing, because you are defending somebody who has been wrongfully accused and has a record already because of not fault of hers, you know, like in your case. This is absolutely ridiculous. Women are still perceived to be sufficient. It's absolutely makes me so angry. We need to change this.
I agree.
I'm sorry this happened to you.
No, you know, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Right before I was doing this whole coalition thing, I basically went to the local state attorney in my district, and I had a bill. It was about police-involved, officer-involved domestic violence. and I was proposing him to try to, you know, have some kind of protection for women who are victims of men who are either in law enforcement or are in law enforcement, because I think it's very difficult for somebody to be objective when you're dealing with one of your own. So to bring in an advocate or somebody who's been trained to see to in those particular incidents specifically, because it's so rampant. I mean, 40% of all police officers are domestic violence abusers. And
that's what I found out.
You can get
also. Yeah, go ahead.
Huh? Well, what
I found out
you know, recently.
Yeah,
scary.
It is very scary.
It's very scary. And you can get fired. You know, an officer will get fired for possession of cocaine, but that same officer can beat his wife, put her into a hospital, and he might get a warning. And then they'll cover up for him. I'm not saying all cops. There are definitely good officers out there. So I don't want to brand everybody's bad because that's not right.
No.
I don't want to say that, but I would say, you know, there certainly is, if you keep in mind that you've got, let's say, 10 people who show up to your scene, and actually there was probably about 8 officers who showed up at my scene the night that my incident happened. Well, if you have 10, 4 of those are probably in a domestic violent relationship. So how would they possibly not take a side of the officer, former officer, you know, over the victim? And that's why I think it's so important to have that oversight so victims can be, you know, properly treated when they go through something as horrific as calling the police. They shouldn't be victimized. It's not good. It's not right. And I'm really hoping that we're going to see some reform. The upside about working with the state a little bit on this situation with the coalition is that I met a lot of really great state representatives, not in my district, unfortunately. They're not great, but I did meet some outside of my district, and they reached out to me and said, you know, your testimony, thank you so much for coming forward with your testimony. And if there's anything I can do to help you, I will. And I said, well, there will be. I want a bill to get presented in front of the House of Representatives the next time they're in session to pass a bill about officer-involved domestic violence. You know, baby steps, but something. So I'm
absolutely
hopeful that it happens. But yeah, it's horrible.
It is horrible. Continue to do what you're doing. We have, I know a lot of people are trying to have this registry with the perpetrators, you know, who are wife beaters, you know. Everybody should know in what kind of a person they have at home and in what kind of a relationship they're getting into. I think it's fair, and nobody is taking it seriously, you know, because it's your life online, for God's sake, you know. Nobody wants to die.
Well, the sad part about that is, you know, I know there are a lot. There's, I think Tina's Law, there's Megan's Law, there's a very dear friend of mine, Dale Driscoll, in upstate New York. Her daughter and her granddaughter were murdered by a gentleman that her daughter was dating who had a violent background. He'd been in jail, and she asked him why, and he said, oh, he had a fight in the bar. Well, that wasn't it. It was domestic violence. So when her daughter and her granddaughter got killed by this man, she's been trying for 10 years to have that violent offenders registry. 10 years. And you know who's opposing it the most? The Domestic Violence Coalition. Why? Because it takes money away from them.
See?
And that's where we say, you know, all these people have reached out to me throughout the country about domestic violence coalitions. Their interest is self-interest. And not all, again, I'm not being broad with everybody, but the situations I've heard, they're holding back that opportunity for this law to get changed. They don't want to see the change because that's less money for the coalition. So it makes you wonder really where all this money's going and what is the real thing. So I don't know. Hopefully there'll be some oversight on these very, very powerful coalitions throughout the state, because like you said, you can't get, this registry alone would save so many people. I mean, we have that for sex offenders. Why don't we have it for violent offenders?
Exactly. Exactly. We are going to continue the war. Don't worry. We're going to do our best, and you're doing amazing. Don't give up. And I can see you're not going to give up. And I'm sorry what happened to you, you know, but, you know, the best teachers come from life. And you know very well how it feels, you know, to be wrongfully, you know, convicted about something you didn't do. And you're dealing with a very dangerous person, basically. In your case, your husband was a policeman. And it's making things even more complicated. But eventually, I think things are going to go away, you know, and we're going to start seeing more progress. Because more people get involved. Like I told you, the whole city of Los Angeles, the mayor, everybody here, Uber is even giving free rides for the victims of domestic violence. So it definitely shows that people are awakening and realizing that domestic violence is a crime and something needs to be done. So that's a good thing. And your coalition, and everybody came together and they did something about what was going on.
Yeah, it's been a journey. It really has. And I think that what my biggest takeaway from this is, you know, it's kind of made me look at the whole situation and say, what can I do to make a difference with all these different people that are coming to me to make, you know, a big difference throughout the country? And if I can, I will. But I'm altruistic, but I do believe in standing up for what's right. So...
Absolutely.
Important. But yeah, I appreciate everything that you have to say. There's a lot going on that should be changed. And hopefully one day at a time, those things will get changed.
Eventually it will. Eventually it will. I'm kind of a positive and I think things are going to change completely. So we are out of time. Thank you so much, Amy, for being on my show. Thank you for what you do, and every step counts, and don't be discouraged by other people, you know, and every step counts, everything what we do makes a ripple in the water, you know, and when you throw a rock and it makes a ripple, right? It's the same thing with people who are doing that, because we are actually triggering change. And nobody should discourage you or discourage anybody else because you're doing the right thing and you know how it feels. And it's really easy to judge people when you have never been in a domestic violence and abusive situation. And once you get in one, then you understand what exactly is going on. I think it's the biggest problem when it comes to domestic violence and abuse. So thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
I wish you best, all the best. Be safe, be healthy, stay home, do your best. And I'm sure we're going to see each other and work together. And let's make this domestic violence and abuse disappear, because it's absolute crime. And not only women are get hurt, children get hurt, and it's a tragedy.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for the listeners who were with us today. Reach to Amy if you have any questions. Everything is going to be on my website, dianabelleros.com. And I wish you an amazing day. Please be safe. Please be healthy. Stay home. And this is going to go away. Remember that we are all in this together.